Hey, it's Jesse, and welcome to the second episode in this three-part series. This is recorded during the Ultimate Mind training that we did with our private community, and I thought you would enjoy these excerpts around more specific areas. You know, a lot of times on the podcast we talk about more general philosophy or bigger concepts, and these are certainly big, but they're also designed to be very practical. So with that being said, we're going to dive right into the second part of this series. This one is on ultimate love, and man, if there's any single word that creates more desire and or confusion, I think it's love. I mean, there's probably some other ones up there. God, money, you know, they're up there. Love is a big one, though. And it's so interesting that, you know, we take this word and it's almost like everybody assumes that we all are talking about the same thing. But love, in my experience and in my observation, is not really a word. It is an experience, and it is a very unique experience. It's an evolving experience. And so today is this episode is exploring how to have more of this frequency, more of this feeling in your life, regardless of what your current relationship or relationship status might be. We're going to look at this thing called love from an inside out perspective, and not only to how to feel more of it, how to have more of it, how to have more strength in your life because of it, how to exude more power and more confidence as a result of this thing called love. And I think you'll find that this will create external conditions in your life with others that is really beautiful, and creates a very powerful sense of connection and deeper fulfillment in your life. So with that being said, welcome to this second episode in the three-part series from The Ultimate Mind, and I hope you enjoy it. Talk to you soon.
Need nothing, appreciate everything, have it all. Welcome to the podcast that helps you architect your most self-authorized, productive, and fulfilled life. Join action philosopher Jesse Elder on a journey to greater joy, freedom, and wealth of every kind as he shares insights gained from the leading edge of liberated living. The hardest part is accepting just how easy success can be. And now, Jesse.
Greetings, Ultimates. This is a session many of you might have even enrolled for. All the other stuff is great, but maybe this is the one that you signed up for. So we'll give it a few seconds here. Hi. We'll give it a few seconds for everybody to jump in. There you are. And today, the topic is ultimate love. Fairly controversial topic in the sense that everybody has their own idea of what love is and what love means and where it comes from and all that kind of stuff. So as always, I'm not here to try and share the truth. I'm simply here to share what I've observed has been useful. And it might sound weird to talk about love in such a digital way. Is it useful or is it not? And yet, what I've continually experienced for a few decades now is that by applying that simple philosophy, is it true or is it useful? It really creates for friction-free living, especially when it comes to matters of the heart. Love. Woo! Is there any concept that has been more hijacked by mass marketing? Holy shit. Is there any human emotion that has been more hyped and more programmed than love? Money is a close second, but man, you know, they say money makes the world go round, but only because of love. One of my first instructors said, look, love is wonderful, but no finance, no romance. And that was his take on it, was like, look, you got to get your money in shape first. So regardless of where you are right now in your life, in this particular area of love, we're going to explore some different concepts to have more of it in your life. And we'll start with this. Most of the world, and certainly we all have this ability, we tend to put things first and then feelings second. And it's a giant sort of algorithm. If this, then that. Can you think of some examples where people do this, or maybe even where you've done this in your own life? I want, fill in the blank, I want the job so that I can have the money. I want the money so that I can feel secure. What do you really want? You want security. Omer, to answer your question, yes, we're going to address love in the romantic sense, although we're not going to limit it to that. Romantic love, intimate physical expression, these are aspects of love or aspects of loving, aspects of being lovable, but they are more byproducts than they are an outcome. We're gonna dive deep into this today, don't worry. So glad you guys are here, and everybody that's still jumping in, welcome. Welcome to Ultimate Love. All right, we got some gangsters here, so good. So, this idea then about love being a goal, love is something that you need to go out and get. And what does it look like? Well, the traditional narrative is, and we'll use traditional roles here for a little bit. The traditional narrative says, boys are strong, girls are pretty. Boys are strong, girls are pretty. In the US at least, North America, there's this Barbie doll, and I don't think they've come out with a CrossFit version or a Marine Sniper version. I don't think they've yet come out with any sort of Barbie doll that is outside of the cultural narrative of women are pretty. That's it. Girls are pretty. And boys. Boys are strong. Boys are strong. Boys don't cry. Boys don't show emotion. All right. Well, I'm glad if they've come out with that, that's good. I'm a little behind in my Barbie history. But we're taught that girls are pretty and boys are strong. So girls become sort of groomed and conditioned to be pretty. But what about, physical strength? What about, what about following your own adventurous heart? That's not something that is even today is still not the cultural narrative. Boys have to be tough and have to be strong. And what this ends up creating is a real pressure for boys who grow up to become men who aren't that good at creating or sharing emotion. And so most men are actually not that good at showing emotion unless it's a sporting event or unless, their team is winning or unless they are going through something really intense, whether it's war or perhaps sex, then it's okay to show some expression and show some emotion on your face. But other than that, stone-faced, got to be logical, got to be smart. So we got this sort of paradox going on here. Girls are not encouraged to fully express their emotion. Many men are scared of a woman who's fully expressing her emotion because they don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to deal with a woman who is just fully raging in all of her feminine storm. And what this sort of creates is a feeling that women just need to be pretty and kind of repress it. And then guys need to be stone-faced and can't cry and can't laugh and can't show all this emotion. So again, you are exceptions to this. You probably wouldn't even have, A, you wouldn't be in Ultimates, and B, you would never have made it to session 10 if you fit that standard narrative. But I'm just sharing this because it's useful to understand the sort of world that we're navigating in, because it does require a tremendous amount of strength, inner strength, and emotional resolve to embrace all aspects of your humanity, all aspects of you. And so what we are continually told and taught is that love is outside of you. Love is someone else. Love is someone else. One of the most famous lines from at least any American movie is this line from Jerry Maguire. Anybody see that movie? And I'm not talking about the line where he says, "Show me the money." That was a good line too. But the other line, remember with Renee Zellweger? And they just look at each other and they're just in this intense emotional moment. And what's the line? Do you remember this? Type in the comments if you remember that line. You complete me. Excuse me. All right, let's look at this ridiculously popular concept. You complete me. First of all, what an incredible intrusion that is on someone else's freedom. To presume that they have the power to complete you. Which is the exact same thing as admitting your belief that you are somehow incomplete. So we've got people walking around incomplete, like a half a circle, and they haven't figured out that they are the source of their experience. They are the creator of their experience. They are feeling, you are feeling, the fullness of your own emotions and your own energy. And if you don't like the way you feel, you can change it. In fact, you're the only one who can change it. And so if somebody doesn't understand that, they don't recognize that, and they don't live in that way, they don't practice this fine art of the pivot, they don't know how to get back into their own groove and how to soothe themselves back into this ease and flow of being themselves. If somebody doesn't practice this and doesn't know how to do this, then of course you think you're less than and the world is responsible for filling you up. And then here comes another person who feels the same way. And then because of some mix, some match, some frequency resonance, and maybe it's something as simple as, you know, a genetic, you know, maybe it's just pheromones, maybe it's just chemistry, maybe it's earlier conditioning, you know, you never had that particular look when you were growing up and you always wanted it. Now here's this person that has it, or maybe this person reminds you of somebody you used to have a crush on, or maybe they exhibit a quality that was missing when you were a child, and who knows how many more reasons there are for people to become attracted to one another. But here we have this person who is admittedly not self-authorized. And here's this other person who is practiced at not self-authorizing. And then they see each other and they go, "Oh my God. Oh my goodness." And then when that connection is made, whether it is, yes, because that person is just smoking hot, or because they remind you of who you'd like to be, or because they appreciate you, or whatever. It doesn't matter why. I don't even know. Is it useful? Why? We just know that it happens. And when it happens, all of these incredible sensations start to flow. It is an amazing drug, more like a collection of drugs. And I think Dr. Jack is in the house. He could do an entire micro dissertation on all of the chemistry that's involved in your brain and body when this thing happens. Now, whether it's love or infatuation or pent-up need or boredom, or it just feels really intense. And there's no doubt that this feeling is certainly stimulated and certainly a co-creation with someone else. But underneath all of that is a self-authorized experience. And in fact, having this experience, whether it's with someone new that you've never seen before, or this can absolutely happen, happens all the time, with people who have been in a relationship for years. And all of a sudden, there's a rekindling, there's a reigniting of this chemistry. It's not only possible, it's inevitable whether it's with a brand new person and something you're looking for, or whether it's something you're not looking for, or it's somebody that you've been in a relationship with. What we're talking about here is the connection between two people. And here's what's very interesting about this. All of this is self-generated first, and then co-created second. This is the only logical way to approach love from my perspective. Self-authorized first, self-generated, co-created second. The alternative would be to make someone else responsible for your frequency, for your feelings, and for your vibration. As this particular session goes on, we'll talk about heartbreak and heartache, and we'll talk about loneliness and some of those other sides of the equation. But let's talk about you for just a moment. When it comes to this experience, this sensation or set of sensations, what is your desire? And you don't have to type in the comment if you want, or you can. But what is your particular desire right now when it comes to this thing called love? And if you've got your journal there, just go ahead and start writing it down. And notice, as you're having these ideas, does it look like a condition? Is that the thing that comes to mind? That you want a condition? Do you want a container? Do you want a Facebook status? Do you want a schedule? These are all external things, all of which you can have, no question. But notice, when it comes to asking yourself, what do I want when it comes to love? Do you still have this culturally programmed idea that it's something outside of you? And of course, that's beautiful, and it's very useful, and it's quite unforgettable, actually, when you do share that with someone. But what we're talking about here is root cause. What we're talking about here is the prime mover when it comes to this frequency of love. So when you're asking yourself, what do I want when it comes to love? What do I want when it comes to connection? What do I want when it comes to relationship or partnership? What do I want when it comes to dating? What do I want when it comes to intimacy and sexual health and deeper physical connection? These are all aspects of the same thing. But I want to challenge you to move beyond the cultural narrative, move beyond the algorithm that says, if this, then that. If I have someone, then I'll feel something. No question that that someone will serve as an incredible magnifier, as a lens, as a mirror. But what are they magnifying? What is that person reflecting? What is that person amplifying? What is that person eliciting from you? It all comes back to you. It all comes back to the most practiced frequencies that you have. And so, share with you an example that was definitely a full spectrum experience for me earlier in my life. I was 22. Matter of fact, I remember this exactly. It was the year before I opened my martial arts school. And my life back then was teaching, training. Everything about me was martial arts, fighting, teaching. That was it. And I was beginning to get really into mindset and understanding the connection between my thoughts and how my thoughts affected my feelings and how my feelings were affecting my behavior and all of that, right? So during this process, during this time, I was getting ready to open my school, And I didn't have a lot of students. I had about 30 students at this gym that I was teaching at. I had a few people that were doing kickboxing classes, a couple of private lesson students. And the reason I share that is because it wasn't like there was lots of transactions happening financially. You know, I'd get a couple of checks a week, you know, people would come in. So one day I took the couple of checks that I had, people were, you know, paying their tuition, and I took the checks and went to the bank. Remember that? And I went to the bank and I'm standing in line and, you know, just got my checks and I'm next. And I go up to the teller and I'm kind of out of it. I'm just like focused on the checks and thinking about what's next. And I look up and I see this face looking back at me, and I see these deep, beautiful eyes and this beautiful skin. And I see this curly, like almost frizzy waterfall of hair. And I'm looking at this person and I'm just looking at her like, and it was the proverbial, like my heart skipped a beat. And she was just smiling very sweetly. And I kind of managed to fumble through the motions of filling out the checks and got my receipt. And that was it. I left. And I could not stop thinking about this person. I could not stop thinking about her. Her name is Kelly. Still is Kelly, I'm sure. And so I ended up thinking, wow, when's the next time that I'm going to go to the bank? Because I really want to see this woman again. So I devised this strategy that instead of going to the bank once a week when I would accumulate my checks, I would just go anytime I got a check. And it was so bad that I would even tell students, oh no, don't, just go and bring a check on Thursday. Just bring a check on Thursday, no problem. Because I already had a check for Tuesday. That's how bad it was. 22-year-old Jesse. So I go to the bank, go out, you know, go in line, and I'm timing it. I'm looking, I'm like, okay, one, two, three. All right. And I would start letting people ahead of me. Like, no, go ahead. No, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, bank stalker Andy for sure. Go ahead. No, wait, my turn. And I'd get in line and I'd just casually kind of walk up. And we, you know, over a couple of days of doing this, you know, she's like, wow, your business is really doing great. I'm like, yeah. You know, things are pretty good. And we became friendly and just these little 2-minute conversations. And I still, no way that I could get up the nerve to ask for her phone number, to ask her out. Remember, this is the phase of my life that I was ridiculously shy. Publicly, a lion. One-on-one, a lamb. It was not good. But a beautiful evolutionary experience, without which I don't think I'd have the same level of appreciation or maybe even distinctions that I do today. So anyway, fast forward a couple of weeks and she's, you know, getting used to me showing up and bringing checks. And one day I finally got up the courage and I said, hey, you know, I'd love to get to know you better and maybe we can go have lunch sometime. And she said, you know, I'd really love to, but, you know, I'm really busy these days and, you know, I can't. I was like, okay, cool. And I don't think my face displayed the disappointment that I was in. But this is really before I'd even figured out that rejection was an illusion. This is before I understood that I'm the only one that can reject myself. And when you are full of yourself, then you can't really experience rejection, at least not to the same level that you know you might have before. So I didn't know these things, and it was really meant a lot to me. But I thought, you know what? This is temporary. I'm going to go back again. So I just thought, I'm just going to keep asking her until she says, look, I'm not interested. Don't ask me again. And I'm not sure what I would have done at that point. But I thought, you know what? She didn't say not to ask her out. She just said, now is not a good time. Not today. So I went back again the next week. And this time I just felt a little better because I'd released the expectation and the attachment to what was going to happen. So I just walk up to her and was in the line of like, hey, Kelly. And she's like, hey, Jesse. I said, how about dinner on Friday? She's like, she just got this big smile. And then she said, this Friday I can't. I was like, cool. See you next week. She's like, good. I'm like, all right. So it became this game. She just got used to me asking her out and she would say no. And I would say, cool, see you next time. And she would say, yeah. So this just kept going. And finally, like after a month of this, I walked in, went through the normal thing. And at this point, it had become sort of a habit. You know, I mean, I wasn't closed-hearted and just like going through the motions, but I definitely wasn't expecting anything to happen. I was just being me and continually sending out these playful invitations, which were met with humor and they were met with good nature. And so she was definitely playing the game and it was fun. So then I asked her out and I said, hey, do you want to go have coffee this week? And she said, no, this week I can't. But she just smiled. She had this big smile. She said, no, this week I can't. And I just looked at her and I said, Kelly, is that a delay or a denial? And she blushed. She turned red. And she looked away. And then she looked back and she whispered and she said, it's a delay. And I said, awesome. I'll see you next week. So this continued for weeks. Here's what happened. Good question. She was in the process of healing from a relationship. She wasn't up for any new connections, but there was obviously some connection that was there. So one day, a couple weeks after this, I asked her and I said, hey, do you want to have dinner? And she said, actually, tonight, this is a Friday. She said, tonight, some of us from the bank, we're all going to go have dinner. I'd love if you can join us. And I was like, cool, I'll be there. And we ended up having the best night. And that led to a beautiful relationship. And the beauty of that relationship was that it was so intense. It was the first time in my life that I had experienced that depth of love, that depth of connection. It was reciprocated on many, many levels. And yet, there was always this sort of resistance. And I remember being very affected by this. Can you guys see this? Y'all are getting some freezing. Are you breaking Facebook again? It'll come back. It always does. We'll give it a few seconds. Can you guys see this? I know a bunch of you are logging back in. We'll give it a few seconds here. It'll come back. You guys know it'll come back. It's good for a lot of you guys. Some of you, it's not. All right, we're coming back. You haven't missed anything, I promise. Consider that an intermission. All right, that was just a little break. No worries. All right, we're good? Shall we continue? You didn't miss anything, I promise. All right, awesome. So what ended up happening was every week or a couple of times a week, we'd get together, we'd have coffee, we'd have lunch, we'd go see a movie. And it was just this beautiful, it was very beautiful in its innocence. We were very good friends. And here's what started happening. I became aware of this fear that I had because the love that I was feeling that felt so generated by her. I felt so loved by her and I felt so seen by her and I felt so supported by her. And she was always so interested in what I was doing and always so expressive about what she was doing. So we were spending all this time together and I knew that we both wanted different things. My focus was completely on building my schools, completely I had just opened my school at this point. She was not in a space to open up to a relationship. So it was just this sort of parallel track that sometimes would kind of come closer and not quite there. And I became aware of this incredible deep fear. And the fear that I had was the loss of this love. The fear that I had was this feeling going away. And it sort of culminated one night when we were scheduled to meet. You know, we were going to meet up and go have dinner, like usual. And she didn't show. And I was like, that's weird. This never happened. And so I texted her and didn't hear back and waited a few more minutes, called, nothing. And I was concerned because I thought, man, this is like, we've never been out of contact. This is really, like, I'm starting to wonder, is she okay? And a couple of hours later, you know, I hadn't gotten in touch with her. A couple of hours later, she sent me a text and she said, I can't see you anymore. And this was like, at that time, 23 years old, this was my nightmare. Feeling so loved and so open and so connected. And then to hear, I can't see you anymore. And it was an interesting few hours because I was feeling all this sadness and I was feeling this back then, what I thought was heartbreak, feeling all this loss. But then I began to go deeper into the feeling. I began to go deeper into what am I actually feeling? I feel like, okay, because something's going on for her. I've been clear about who I am and about what I want and what I'm up for, what I can and can't provide. She's been clear, okay, well, if this is what she needs to do, then I respect that. I respect her freedom. So now let me just figure out these emotions. And I started to realize that what I was afraid of missing was that feeling. And the pain was so intense that I had to make a choice. Do I just cover up this feeling and say, well, screw love, like, I don't want love? No, I want love. I just don't want the pain of not having it. So is there a way? What do I really want to feel? So that pain drove me to focus on what I want. This is the purpose of all pain. So I began to think, what do I really want? What I really want is to feel love. I just want to feel that sensation. I want to feel loving. I want to feel loved. And so I began just to focus on that feeling. And over the days and the weeks that followed, I began to focus more and more on being loving, even when it hurt. Being loved and allowing myself to receive in all sorts of different ways. A couple weeks went by and she ended up calling me and she was almost in tears and she said, I'm so sorry. And then she just filled me in on the whole story. Her ex had shown back up and they entered into this whole vortex of reconnection and trying to see if it would work. It ended up not working in a spectacular fashion. And she called and she was very, she acknowledged. She said, I realized that, you know, me leaving like that probably was hurtful and I'm sorry if that hurt you. And it just reconnected our friendship. And we stayed in touch over the years and that was it. It was a beautiful experience. And that was, in my life, that was one of the first experience actually of making the distinction between externally sourced love and internally sourced love. And dealing with the fear of the loss of love is what creates space for actual love. Let me say that again. Dealing with the fear of loss of love is what creates space for actual love. And this is obviously a much larger topic than we can cover in just one video, even here in Ultimates. But deep down underneath all of these other interactions and friendships and partnerships and all these other forms that love might take is this resilience and this self-authorizing of your own feelings. And I have been truly blessed or gifted or lucky that in my life, I've had probably half a dozen times where I've experienced that intensity. It happened then. It happened again a couple of years later, briefly, when I got divorced. Although well before my divorce, I experienced that while in the marriage. I felt completely by myself, even sitting next to somebody that I was in a marriage with. And it was not her fault. It wasn't anybody's fault. It was just a result of me not being myself, of holding back who I was to try and accommodate someone else. And that created a feeling of isolation, shockingly enough. So she wasn't doing anything. She wasn't creating it. I was creating it. And I experienced heartbreak then, a dull, persistent heartache that lasted for years, on and off. I experienced it again after the divorce, not really even with her. We'd already created enough of a separation. And for me, it was the right choice. But around the kids, that was a tough one. For months, at various times, I'd wake up in the middle of the night with my pillow completely soaked in tears. I would just wake up from a dream where I'd just been crying so hard. And I've experienced it enough times in my life to respect and appreciate the signal for what it is, the signal of pain, the signal of heartache or heartbreak, the signal of longing. Because this longing is not for another person. This longing is not to have someone in your life to complete that circle. It's not a completion. It's a reflection. And that person, whoever they are their own energy source. They're their own generator of power. And so they are radiating this power. You're radiating this power. And then this creates this incredible overlap. But at the end of the day, it's all you. 2013, when I was experiencing this heartache of not seeing the kids that I'd raised, kids that I was in their life for 12 years. And there were many things that I did during that time, during the separation, during the divorce, that completely contributed to the lack of communication. And I'm fully aware of that now. But one of the results of the way that my spouse at the time, the way that she and I uncoupled, one of the results was that the kids saw her having her response and her reaction, and made the very understandable choice that they were going to just support her. And part of that support meant not talking to me. And so that pain of being disconnected from these kids that I'd raised and been in their life for 12 years was at the time the most intense pain that I'd ever experienced. It made the pain of, you know, being 22 and having this fear of loss of love look like a snack compared to the main course of this feeling. And within that pain always comes information. And sometimes you have to struggle and stretch and fight for the remembrance that you are actually indestructible. And it just takes one breath at a time. Sometimes it takes going for a walk. Sometimes it takes whatever. There's a lot of ways that you can deal with the feelings. But it's the same principle. Becoming present, developing awareness and insights, and always leads to newer capacity. And so to truly experience this thing called love is to look at the distinction between love and need. Love and need. If love, this feeling of love, is an expansive feeling, where is it coming from? It's coming from within, or sourced from the void, or it's coming forth, which means it's infinite in its supply. Need is an externally sourced quantity, an externally sourced desire. And I'm not talking about basic human needs like oxygen and food and sex and sunshine and connection. These are basic human needs, but I'm talking about neediness. I'm talking about the failure to understand your own completion and thinking that you need somebody else to do it for you. So love is an expansive, expressive, limitless sensation. It may be completely democratized and centralized and just spread out and you feeling it for everybody, or it may be deliciously, tightly, lovingly focused onto a single being that you are partnered with. There's no right way to do this. There's only what's right for you. And so love versus need. One of the exercises that I did to kind of get myself through this thing when I was in my early 20s is, I started listening to the lyrics of songs, and I realized that with all the love songs, how kind of whiny they are. You ever notice that? Now, is there any wonder why they sell millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions of albums, but there's a reason why it's a huge industry, because for somebody that's walking around feeling incomplete, and then here's this song about incompleteness, they go, oh my God, that's me. But if you listen to most of the lyrics about love, and it's all about how, you know, I'm nothing without you, and you are the source of my happiness. You are the wind beneath my wings, and you are the reason for my blah, 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 all of this. Or because you left, now I'm destroyed. And there's all of this complete lack of lack of personal responsibility. But one of the things that I did when I was in my early 20s is I would listen to these songs, and I would, to break myself out of this cultural hypnosis, I would put myself in this sort of state where what I would do is I'd listen to these songs, and every time the word love was in the song, I would put the word need, like a needy feeling. And I remember I did this one. I don't remember what the song was, but I did it, and I was like, oh my God, this is like the national anthem of codependent nation. This is insane. Once you take the word love out, which sounds very flowery and poetic and romantic, but you put what they're actually saying, which is need, neediness. Oh my God. And is there any faster way to lose something than to have a needy attachment for it? That's based truly in fear. Neediness is always rooted in lack. Neediness is always rooted in fear. Scarcity thinking. I'll never meet another one like that. Really? There are like 8 billion people on the planet. And when I was in my early 20s, I absolutely subscribed to the doctrine of the one. There's one person in this whole world that I'm supposed to meet. And when I meet them, And the concept of soulmate. There is a soulmate. A soulmate. And when you meet that soulmate, you're going to be perfectly compatible. Everything's going to work out just great forever and ever. And you'll never have any problems. And you'll never be interested in exploring other connections. And you'll only want to be with that person. And you're going to have 58 kids. And you're going to live in a white house with a picket fence. And it's going to be awesome. If you are currently having that experience and it is thrilling for you, then amazing. Keep going. Make it more amazing. And if you're human, then you've experienced some conflict. You've experienced some difference of opinion, some contrast, some different desires. Welcome to being human. I've had many soulmate connections. They're rare and they're beautiful. And every one of them is a perfect opportunity to bring up your beliefs about what, you know, what do you really feel? What do you really think? How vulnerable are you willing to be? And this is not a session or a video about the structure of a relationship. This is truly for you to determine and to decide. But from my perspective, love, the experience of love, is an inside job. It's an inside experience. And the choice to be loving, not based on the environment, but based on who you are and based on what you are. And then from that feeling, you will always see and attract what matches that feeling. And sometimes you get very close to the intimacy and the intensity. And sometimes that's really volatile. Sometimes it's too much. And there are generalizations to this that add to the game a common, perhaps even prevalent, theme for feminine energy is security. And so this is a very healthy balance that a man who projects an aura of confidence and direction, and he knows exactly what he wants, and he's willing to do what it takes to get it. This is just an attractive human quality in general. But this also creates an idea of security for a woman that can create attraction. So if you're a dude and you are in those moments of life, you're like, well, you know, I don't know, and all of this, just recognize that that's not exactly the most attractive state that you can be in. Now, for men have an incredible desire. We all do as humans, but men have a more dominant desire for freedom, to explore and to go out. This is a natural dance. And so as both people in the relationship, using masculine and feminine descriptors here, as both people are secure in themselves, sourcing their own love to the best of their ability, recognizing themselves as the source of this love, not making the other person responsible for feeling it, truly, this idea of love, letting others voluntarily evolve, this means that anybody that you are in a relationship with, look at all of these powerful women in here. and here's the thing, because especially when a woman is going through a period of massive expansion, and anyone, men and women, but for women too, the pendulum swings to the exploration of freedom, the desire for freedom. We all want freedom, exactly, Ariel. And that won't ever change. But there are many women who are threatened by a man's desire for freedom, just as there are many men that are threatened by a woman's desire for freedom. But ultimately, here's the thing. If you actually have yourself as the source of the love that you're feeling, and if you can feel love because you just want to feel love, if you just want to be loving, if you want to feel loving, if you want to feel loved, then this is who you are, and this is how you be, and this is how you express yourself, and you can connect with anybody on whatever level you feel inspired to. And if that's how you're living your life, and then here's this other person that you also have a feeling of adoration and devotion and love for, then if this is the person who you truly love, then doesn't it just make sense that you want for them what they want for them? Doesn't this just make sense? If the person that you are loving, and we'll talk about in love in just a moment, but if the person that you are loving needs to have their hobby or their space or be with their friends or feel their own energy, then when you love that person, you don't try and control that or restrict that. That's neediness. That's based on fear. So when the person says, "This is what I need," you say, "You go knock yourself out. I'll be here." And they're like, "I might not be back for 10 years. You're like, "Look, you need what you need. And if you decide that that's what you need, and if I want for you what you want for you, then that's what must happen." Nothing kills attraction faster than neediness and obligation. And it's not always easy. But from my perspective, and based on many conversations with lots of people and seeing this play out in all sorts of different ways, this is ultimate freedom. Absolutely, Andy, greatest freedom. Ben, yeah, we'll talk about the energy split in a moment. And so if you are not making someone else responsible for your love feelings, if you have practices and habits and orbits that you're in your life that allow you to be in this state of love, then when someone else makes the choice to do something, then the relationship can be one based on expansion. We just glitched there. I didn't miss anything, I promise. The relationship can be based on mutual growth and mutual expansion. And it does require a tremendous degree of self-authorization on both people's parts. For anybody who's involved in the partnership to take 100% responsibility for their feelings first. And then to back up that responsibility with clear communication skills so that they can express their desires, express their feelings, express their appreciations, and not only express, but receive. I mean, is there anything that feels better? Well, lots of things probably, but it does feel good to be in a connection with someone or be in a relationship with someone where you feel you can just be yourself. Poof. How gross does it feel to feel like, well, if I say this, it's going to create this. And if I do that, it's going to create that. And next thing you know, you're aware of even entertaining the idea of censoring, of holding back your behaviors because you don't want to create a conflict. That's bullshit. That's not a loving relationship. That's control. That's barter. That's trading. That's treating love as a scarce commodity that has to be fought for and bought and traded and tricked and manipulated. Fuck that. That's not what love is for. So if it's a healthy relationship, if it's a relationship where you are, as Dr. Jack says, you're an advocate for your partner's freedom, then you see them living their life and it brings you nothing but joy. Even if you don't see them living their life because they're out living their life. And then they'll come back at some point. They'll say, "Oh my God, I just had the most incredible experience." You're like, "Tell me all about it. I can't wait to hear." A relationship that's based on mutual expansion, a relationship that is based on individual freedom first and foremost, then upon that individual freedom is shared freedom. This contains so many opportunities for growth, so many opportunities for, and I don't mean growth in the the new spiritual sense of the word where people say, "Yeah, I'm really growing." What they mean is they're justifying their poor choices. But I mean actual expansion, actual growth, like holy shit. I've had some very interesting experiences this year. And by interesting, I mean mind-blowing with so many different friends. Dr. Jack is on here. He's one of them. Alex, who works with me with the Muse. Many of you know her. And a sort of common theme is, holy shit, what a day. Like at the end of the day, we're like, wow, what a day. And, you know, the muse will constantly say, average. And we'll both just crack up laughing because it was the most insane day ever. It was a day that felt like a month. Average. But the reason why that exists, I believe, and I'm still, this is very much a leading edge experience for me. So it's not like I've got all these proven philosophies around it. But she is someone, and she's here, and I'll share some observations. She is someone who is ridiculously committed to her own self-expression, completely committed to growing and expanding and enjoying and feeling fully, whether it's running her coaching group or running her management company or doing her work, you know, modeling, acting, or playing piano or taking a class or dancing her ass off in Morocco or going to Burning Man. She just lives in this very self-expressed, unapologetic way. And it's very easy to appreciate someone who's living in that way. It's very easy to appreciate that. And in my own experience, it's a clear reflection because I can see my own desires for freedom and my own appreciation of freedom reflected in that. And the friendship and the connection that we've developed is very much based on this mutual championing of each other's freedom. And I just think about all the friends that I have and the amazing people that are in my life, and this theme runs through all of it. And I look at times in my life where I wasn't experiencing it, and every single time that I wasn't experiencing it, I was either holding myself back from identifying and then expressing my desires, my dreams, my wishes, or I was trying to control someone else's expression of their desires and their thoughts and their freedoms. Both of those I have absolutely practiced. I've practiced my own censorship and I've practiced control. And neither one of which is very cool. Neither one of which is very fun. What's fun is to self-authorize. What's fun is to be the source of your own experience. What's fun is to be the source of your own adventure. And then to see that adventure in someone else, and then to share those adventures with someone else. And the better it gets, the better it can get. This is just how it works. And you get to express your needs, and you get to communicate what you need, and you get to be crystal clear with someone else about what you can and can't provide. That's part of your freedom. And if you don't do this, then you can find yourself drifting away from your core frequency. You can find yourself drifting away from what's right for you. And what's right for you is always changing anyway. So doesn't it just make sense that the best thing that we can do is to first and foremost be honest with ourselves about where we're at and what we're feeling and what we want, and never make someone else responsible for feeling the, or for us feeling the way that we feel? And it's a little paradox here, because if somebody's behaving in a way that makes you uncomfortable, or better said, you feel uncomfortable when someone's being or doing or saying or doing a certain thing, that's your feeling. That person's being themselves. They're expressing in whatever way felt right for them or feels right for them at the moment. So taking responsibility for it and going, huh, I wonder why I'm feeling that way. How would I want to feel instead? And in my experience, at least 9 times out of 10, when I do that little self-inventory, that resistance goes away. And I'm just like, wow, cool. There's being themselves. And then I'm right back into appreciation. And there are times when it rises to the level of language and you get to express the feelings that you have that come up when this person is doing that thing. And you can say something like, hey, I need your help with something. You know, the other day when you know, you ran around the restaurant naked with your hair on fire, you know, I felt a little bit awkward. And I'm sure that that wasn't your intent, you know, for me to feel awkward. But I just want to let you know how I'm feeling. And I support your right to express yourself and do whatever you want. And, You know, the legal bills are almost all paid for, and, you know, the restaurant luckily didn't burn down. But I just want to let you know that when you were doing that, running around naked with your hair on fire, that this is the feelings that I was feeling. And so I just wanted to catch you up because I know you care about my feelings just as I care about yours. And I'll let you do whatever you need to do with it now. Then now it's an opportunity for your partner to come and say, you know what? Wow, I was just so busy fulfilling that childhood fantasy of running around the restaurant naked with my hair on fire. I wasn't even aware of how you might be feeling. Thank you so much for sharing that, your feelings. And I will definitely take that in consideration next time. Wow, thank you so much. All right. So do you see how this works? If something rises to the level of language, then yes, you get to share your feelings, but they're your feelings. Rather than censoring your feelings or trying to control the other person, just put it out there, okay? All right. You guys want to talk about being in love? Where's the violin? Can we just play a little violin here? All right. All right. Let's talk about being in love. This glorified sensation brought to you every year on February 14th, the day of manufactured romance. Nina, I agree 100%. When it gets toxic, it is difficult. And it's a little bit like having a... you know, getting a stomach ache because you keep sipping poison. It will get worse the more you drink. So it's up to you to decide how much poison you'd like to drink. Not you, but it's up to any of us. All right, so let's talk about being in love. So this feeling of love that we've spent most of this session talking about is totally magnified and completely reflected and amplified when there's someone else that you're compatible with chemically, mentally, emotionally, physically, behaviorally, in terms of values, interests, hobbies, aspirations, fears, common struggles. There's all sorts of ways that human beings can bond with each other. And sometimes those ways can stack one on top of the other and you reach your critical mass of electromagnetic energy, aka emotions, with a little chemistry and cocktail woven in. As Dr. Jack said, it's a gnarly cocktail. So now you have all of this energy flowing and you feel like, wow, this is the one. And you even reach this very special space of being in love. Being in love. Let's look at those three words. Being. You're just being. You're being you. And then you're in this feeling deeply called love. And because there's another person involved, they're adding to this feeling. Because when two people are together, regardless of whether they're talking about anything, it doesn't matter what you're talking about, two people are talking, the energy gets magnified. They could be arguing and it's magnified. They could be making love and it's magnified. When two people are together, always magnifies the energy. So here you are with this other person, and now you're feeling this feeling of in love. And at some point, I'm sure you've experienced it. And if you haven't, I highly recommend it. It's totally worth doing. And it's worth jumping in, like with all your clothes on, just jump in and get in there. Two is the minimum requirement for this metaphor. You can have as many as you like. So when you're in this feeling of in love, then oftentimes all sorts of decisions are made. But there's also an introduction of this fear. What if it goes away? What if the fear, or what if the love goes away? AKA, what if the person goes away? And this is how I've found it useful to look at. If love is not an object that you barter and sell and trade and buy and all of that, if love is actually a feeling and a frequency, which you can always feel, then yes, it's lovely to have that feeling magnified with someone else. There's nothing else like it. But they are not the source of that love. So here you are feeling this love. Would it be accurate to say that you are in love? Like you are in the feeling of love. You're in this ocean of love. So let's imagine the pool. Many of you are coming to Ultimate's party, and a lot of you, I'm sure, are going to end up in that pool. So when you're in the pool, let's say you're in the pool by yourself, it's accurate to say, hey, I'm in the pool. And anybody who's outside the pool will go, yeah, you sure are. It's pretty obvious there. You're in the pool. And let's say somebody else comes along and they get in the pool and they go, oh my God, I'm in the pool. And everybody else is like, yeah, you're in the pool. Pretty genius there. And then you're in the pool and this person's in the pool. And then you look across the pool at each other and you say, oh, I'm in the pool. And they say, I'm in the pool. And then you both look at each other and at the same time out loud, you both say, I'm in the pool with you. And everybody on the outside is like, yep, you guys are a couple of Einsteins in there. Pretty captains of the obvious. And you're looking at this person going, oh my God, I'm in the pool with you. And they go, and I'm in the pool with you. And you're like, I love being in the pool with you. And they go, I love being in the pool with you. And you're like, wow. And yes, it's a lovely feeling. I'm not mocking this delightful feeling. But let's look at what actually happens here. What you really love is being in the pool. What adds to it is being in the pool with someone else, because now you're sharing the experience. But is the person the pool? No. And so the person decides, you know what? This was great. Now I'm going to go in the hot tub. Now I'm going to go for a hike. Now I'm going to go ride a scooter. Now I'm going to go for a walk. Now I'm going to go take a nap. Now I'm going to go eat lunch. Now I'm going to go do something else. And that person gives you a hug, or maybe they just turn around. And they get up and they get out of the pool. Now, if you are a conscious being, you're very aware of the fact that that person is no longer in the pool with you. But you're still in the pool. Ah, you're just still soaking in that lovely water and you're just splashing around and you're noticing how good it feels to kind of focus on yourself now in this pool. And now you can just kind of do some flips in the pool because you don't have to talk to that person. You can just enjoy the water and float in the water and then hold your breath underwater and swim. And now you're enjoying differently. You're enjoying different qualities of the pool. And since you're still in the pool and that person is not responsible for the pool, you can even think fondly of the time that you spend in the pool with that person. And you can even think with so much eager appreciation about what that person is now experiencing. You're like, wow, what a badass soul. Here they experience this pool and then they get out of the pool and now they're going for a walk or they're on a scooter. Man, that's inspiring. That's a fucking awesome way to live. I'm so glad that I got to spend time in the pool with that person. Wow, what a life this is. I wonder who the next person is, or I wonder maybe that person will come back. Doesn't really matter as much as I thought it did. Because here I am in the pool, and if I want to go ride the scooter, I can go ride a scooter. I like this. Look, if you're in love, you're in love. If you're out of love, you're out of love. You're either in it or out of it. And that's an individual choice. You may share that being in love with someone, or you may experience it by yourself. You may be out of love, out of the feeling, away from that frequency, and still with another person. But don't make them responsible for you having that feeling. It's not their job. It's actually incredibly unfair to expect someone else to provide that for you. nor is it your job to provide that for someone else. Love and need are not the same thing. Love is based on infinite expansion, which is naturally occurring, easily observable. Everything in this world operates on these natural forces of expansion and harmony. Love is the way that we feel it. Neediness is based on fear. And as your own emotional resilience improves, you don't fear sorrow, you don't fear heartbreak, because you know your heart can never actually be broken. And in the moments of my life that I've experienced deep sadness, fear of loss, heartache, it's been intense. I've had some gloriously leading edge experiences. My choice to live my life with my heart as open as I can and to continually keep it open has led to some fantastic leading edge experiences, some beautiful moments of a deeper sorrow than I knew was possible. Moments where I would wander the street at 2 o'clock in the morning feeling worse than as if the person had died. Because when people die, they just go across to the other side or whatever it is. And it's like, okay, that's part of life. But it's like when they die to you and you know that they're still there, but you miss that connection. I remember a couple of years ago, I was in that frequency, feeling that sorrow. And it was so sad. Like I finally understood all the Shakespearean shit, and you know, all this Romeo and Juliet and this tragic feeling. And I was like, oh God, that's what he was talking about. It's not just copywriting. Oh man, it was intense. At that time, it was the worst heart pain I'd ever experienced. And I remember I couldn't sleep. I was just walking around downtown Austin, and the thought that kept coming into my mind was that, man, I just want to fast forward. I just want to see what's at the end of this life, because I don't know how this makes any sense. Like, I couldn't wrap my mind around it. It just didn't make sense. How can two people who love each other so much be so bad for each other and not have it work out? It was horrible. And I felt like, oh, I'll never experience this again. I'll never feel about somebody the way that I'll feel about this person. Really intense. But it never lasts. Mariah, yes, there is a grieving about that. And I believe that that is a natural, necessary phase. But at some point, your heart heals, always. And then the sorrow becomes a practice more than a natural part of the healing process. You know, if you cut your arm heals. Now you can go and open the wound again and just make it always be healing. But if you leave it alone, it'll heal. Same thing with our hearts. And so I'm incredibly appreciative, even eager for many more experiences like that over the rest of my life. Although as I've leveled up and as I've experienced more and more love, you get better at loving, you get better at you become more resilient. And then the feeling that used to feel so life-threatening and used to feel so existential now is just, you appreciate it, you notice it, and you realize that it's the absence of love that you're feeling. And you know, you can always go and feel love. And my experience of that has been that by needing nothing and appreciating everything, you really can have it all. And the amount of love that I experience in my life, the sense of perpetual adventure, the curiosity and the eagerness, the friskiness and the fun and the playfulness of life just keeps getting better. It just gets better and better and better. And there are people in my life that I cannot imagine my life without. And if that were to ever happen, of course there would be sadness, and of course there would be a grieving, but that's a natural part of the cycle, and it doesn't define us, me, you. It doesn't define who we are. So for me, it doesn't make sense to live life avoiding those feelings. In fact, I rather aggressively pursue those feelings. I pursue expansion and sharing and giving and caring and growth and all of those things. And sometimes you don't always feel inspired to do that. But from my observation, every time I don't feel inspired to go and show love and give love, that's an inside job. That's me choosing to cut myself off from that frequency. So if I go back to that frequency and I fill up my own tanks, the next thing I can't wait to do is go and send a voice message to someone, or go and you know, write a poem, or go and make a Facebook post, go and out and do something, because that's the natural, unignorable action as a result of finding that feeling. So ultimate love, It's an inside job. It's an inside experience. You're always experiencing on the outside a reflection of what you've been practicing on the inside. So what I encourage you to do with this session is to get some clarity about what you want your situation to look like. You know, how do you want your relationship to look? How do you want your love life to look? Regardless of where you're at right now, what is the impossible dream? How do you want it to look? What's the vision that gives you the most energy and excitement? What does it really feel like? And then step two, once you've gotten some idea about that, step two, write down the feelings that that would give you. How would you feel? Like, really get into it. Don't just go through the surface like, I'd feel good. No. Would you feel enchanted? Would you feel mysterious? Would you feel deeply desired? Would you feel sought after? Would you feel seductive, or would you feel seduced? Would you feel entertained? Would you feel motivated? Would you feel inspired? Would you feel galvanized? Would you feel curious? Would you feel playful, flirty? Would you feel hot? Would you feel controlled? Or would you feel surrendered? Would you feel in charge? Would you feel confident? What is the feelings that that particular impossible dream would give you? Find those feelings. Then cultivate those feelings in your life right now. And then all you have to do is maintain those feelings, practice those feelings, live from those feelings. And if you're holding yourself in that frequency, then chill the fuck out. Let it go. Stop trying to find it everywhere. Stop looking for it in your partner, or stop looking for the partner. Feel the fucking feelings. Just feel that. Be yourself. Live that life. Date yourself. Go out and enjoy the life that you want to live, that you would be doing if that other person was there. But forget about them. Let them go. Surrender it. Give it up. Because then it can come to you. At the end of last year, I had finished a very tough year heart-wise. Was going through all this travel and had an experience toward the very end of the year, end of December. There was somebody that I had met a couple of years ago and showed up really powerfully in a meditation. And so I sent her a message. I'm like, hey, you just showed up my meditation. I don't really know what's going on, but you know, we're both pretty tapped in. Maybe there's something there. So we thought, yeah, let's explore it. So we ended up traveling together for a couple of days. And it wasn't what we each thought it would have been. You know, the original messaging was great. And then, you know, when we met and we connected, it was like, So we explored it for a couple of days. And we're like, yeah, this is not what either one of us thought it was going to be. So with appreciation, we went our separate ways. And then I flew back to the U.S. for Christmas. And then the day after Christmas, I flew to Colombia. And I was in Colombia in the jungle, buried up to my face in sand on the banks of a Colombian river. And there was some cactus involved. And I just got this really clear feeling. You know what? Stop, dude. Just give it up, man. You're putting all this energy on attracting a relationship, being in a relationship. My life is awesome. I want to share it. Okay, cool. And I just got this super clear feeling. Chill out. And the words came to my mind so clearly as I'm buried up to my face in Colombian riverbank sand. The words were, I'm done. Like, I'm over it. I let it go. And I felt this visceral sense in my body. I'm done. Like, I'm not seeking anymore. Done. Whew, that was so freeing. And I left Colombia. I got back to Austin and immediately just got into this zone of my life, what it feels like to be myself. And I began playing guitar and piano more and training jujitsu and settling into this new house. And, you know, then we got this idea, oh, let's do another challenge. So we start cranking this challenge. And, you know, we spend like $400,000 in Facebook ads, which for me was a brand new experience. And we enroll all these people in the challenge. And I'm just like in work mode. I'm like, yes, this is great, man, in the zone. And on that challenge, as it turns out, the universe has a great sense of humor. In that challenge, I end up meeting somebody and I ended up crossing a line that I do not cross, which was to message someone that caught my attention who was in the student group. I don't do that. That's bad. But I made an exception this time. And as it turns out, it was a very good choice. And that person has brought so much joy to my life and created such a beautiful friendship because of that connection, which is an absolute soul, metaphysical, weird, mystical connection. My life, I can't imagine how my life would be today without that connection. And I remember clearly the moment of saying, I'm done. Like, I'm not looking for any, I'm not looking for that emotional intimacy. I'm not looking for somebody to, you know, share my guts with and to support and hear and like, okay, cool. I don't want that. And the universe, like 2 week turnaround, here you go. I'm like, oh shit. And so I'm not promising a 2 week turnaround to find somebody who's, you know, becomes your partner in crime. But your willingness, our willingness to do what we need to do for ourselves, to be the person that we think we want to be in the relationship, be that person now. Otherwise, here's what's going to happen. We'll close with this. If you don't live in that way, if you don't live the adventurous, carefree, free-spirited, badass, productive, abundant life now that you think you'll have when you're in a relationship, then all that'll happen is you just end up with somebody that you're now making responsible for making that shit happen. And then when it doesn't, because you don't have the fitness for it, you'll blame them or they'll blame you. Fuck that. That's not healthy. Making sense? Be that person now. And then, last thing, when you're being that person, you'll forget about the fact that you thought you needed somebody else in order for you to have this, and the pain goes away. The sting of loneliness disappears. You can't be lonely when you are in a fucking awesome relationship with yourself, with God, Source, the universe, future self, whatever it is. Your life is so full, even when you're sitting there completely blissed out, popping those sweet, sweet delta waves, and you're just like, whoa, what a fucking life. Man, it's so good. And you look around, and you're like, I don't give a shit that nobody else is here. This is awesome. It feels so good. Next thing you know, you get an invitation. Hey, do you want to go to dinner? We're going to do this. And you're like, yeah. And you go to dinner, and then there's somebody there. You're like, whoa. Why? Of course, because you elevated to that frequency where now that person is. Or don't. Be completely mediocre, average, watch lots of love movies, listen to lots of country music, learn to make other people responsible for your own happiness. And when they don't act exactly the way you think they should act and read your mind and tell you perfect words that you didn't hear when you were 3 years old, when they don't do that, then act all passive aggressive and, you know, hide your feelings and, you know, be jealous and all that other stuff. Look, the outside always reflects the inside. Take care of the inside first. All right. Thanks for tuning in today to Ultimate Love. We'll see you next time for Ultimate Money. In the meantime, why don't you go date yourself? All right. All right. I'll see you guys real soon, okay? Okay.